That's the length of those announcements. Bill will probably only remember for one thing, the hater of children. He's just a messenger. All right, make sure you're in fellowship as we are now getting back to the text. In regards to 1 Peter, where we will now pick up chapter 1, verse 22, continuing on here with respect to his teaching, focusing in on polyvolition and that which evidences polyvolition under the doctrine and importance of Bible doctrine. All right, here looking at verse 22 in the Greek. I've revised it some here for you from the New American Standard. Since purifying your souls in obedience to the truth. Since purifying is the perfect active participle of agnizo, A-G-N-I-Z-O, literally of ceremonial washings and purification. Figuratively, it denotes moral cleansing. Hence, since purifying or cleansing, it's used seven times, this particular verb. Your souls, personal pronoun su, S-U, followed with the noun for souls with the definite article, these souls, psuche, P-S-E-U-C-H-E. In the sphere of obedience to the truth, you have the preposition in. In the locative case, denoting sphere. Here, that is obedience to the truth. Obedience with the definite article, this particular noun, locative feminine singular, is he hupakoe, H-U-P-A-K-O-E. Obedience, submission, compliance. We saw it back in verses 2 and 14, the same noun. And here, the compliance is to the truth. Our noun for truth with the definite article is hey, aletheia. A-L-E-T-H-E-I-A. Aletheia. Truth, obviously, referring to Bible doctrine. For a genuine love of the brothers. The purification of their souls is for a purpose. And here is called a genuine love of the brothers. You have the preposition eis, which in this case denotes purpose, E-I-S. Our adjective for genuine is anupokritos, anupokritos, A-N-U-P-O-K-R-I-T-O-S. Means without hypocrisy, something that is genuine, sincere, as the New American Standard translates it, used six times. Love of the brothers is one word in the Greek, and it's literally brotherly love. It's the noun Philadelphia. Now you know what the city of Philadelphia means. P-H-I-L-A D-E-L-P-H-I-A, the city of brotherly love. It's used six times also. So a genuine brotherly love or love for the brothers. And then we have the final imperative for this section. Fervently love one another from a pure heart. You have the adverb ektenos, E-K-T-E, N-O-S. Strictly, it means in an extended way. Hence, fervently, eagerly, earnestly. Love one another. Our love verb here, as the imperative, as the role imperative, is agapao. A-G-A-P-A-O. One another is a reciprocal pronoun. Alelon. So this love, expression of love, is to be within our own fellowship, if you will. A-L-L-E-L-O-N. Alelon. love one another from a pure heart. That's from the source of your preposition ek, ek. Then we have the adjective here for pure is katharos, k-a-t-h-a-r-o-s. Literally, it means free from dirt. Hence, pure, clean, undefiled. I know the textual variation in the Greek text. This word is left out of the AB manuscripts, but is included of preference by the majority of textual committees on the strength of the Papyrus 72, the Aleph C 81614 manuscripts. And we'll look at that just a little bit more in the notes. So a pure, we're keeping it in here, it makes absolute sense. From a pure heart, heart as it goes with the cleansing, cardia, or now for heart, cardia, K-A-R-D-I-A. So since purifying your souls in obedience to the truth, for the purpose of the genuine love of the brothers, fervently love one another from a pure heart. All right, the analysis of verse 22. One, verse 22 concludes the list of seven commands for the purpose of this section in Peter's letter, verses 13 through 25. Two, the context continues to address that which is necessary to evidence and sustain positive volition phase 2 that began in verse 13, now adding the final imperative to love one another. Positive volition is that which is defined as seekers of God. And one begins seeking with respect to the gospel message, salvation phase 1. Then the issue remains whether or not the individual will be positive in regards to their Christian life and continue to seek God, phase 2. So 3, whereas the imperatives of verses 13 through 17 were designed to address the believer's personal experience for themselves, verse 22 now directs attention and application to others. So 4, the list of the previous role imperatives are NPR, girding your minds for action, spiritual sobriety, focus on SG3, isolation of the STA, righteous conduct and righteous fear. That's your first 6 imperatives. Are all elements of self-discipline and priorities believers are to maintain for themselves. All of these imperatives focuses in on our own spiritual well-being and a reflection of the positive volition and orientation to God's plan as the priorities of the evidence for that positive volition is brought out to us in regards to these imperatives. And all of these really focuses in on our own personal lives, our NPR, staying away from the human viewpoint STA, counter view and approach to life, spiritual sobriety, maintaining a complete hope in regards to the SG3 package that is promised to believers who will sustain positive volition phase 2, the isolation of our STA, righteous conduct to be holy, and righteous fear. These are things that only we can do for ourselves. Somebody else cannot perform these royal imperatives on our behalf. We've got to do it. See? Unless you're a child under somebody's authority, nobody's going to come over to your house and kick your butt and wake you up and get you to Bible class on Sunday mornings. It's up to your own choice. Nobody's going to force you to rebound. You've got to do that yourself. Nobody can force you apart from, obviously, laws and things in regards to being good, but especially to pursue God's holiness apart from your own motivation, your own discipline. So these first 6 imperatives, obviously you're getting the point. These first 6 imperatives are disciplines that we must establish and maintain. And that forms a very foundation in regards to taking our Christian lives and presenting ourselves before God acceptable to fulfill our own ministry in the Christian life. And that ministry is now the very subject of the royal imperative, the final royal imperative that we have before us. So again, point four, NPR, spiritual sobriety, focus on SG3, isolation of the STA, righteous conduct, and righteous fear are all elements of self-discipline and priorities believers are to maintain for themselves. Five, these disciplines formulate the groundwork to now fulfill the believer's responsibility toward others of the royal family. We refer to believers as part of the royal family because of our relationship to the royal priest of which we hang our hat on, Jesus Christ. He is royalty. We are individual priests, and hence we're a part of a royal family. So six, correct applications towards one another should be the natural result. It should be the natural result of maintaining the previous modus operandi and vivendi of the believer's life. Establishing your priorities of operating in the Christian life, NPR, applying separation as necessary, staying focused on your divine good production, and then the manner of life, our very conduct, and all that it pertains. All of these things are designed to produce a very natural function, and that's an application of Bible doctrine towards others. So seven, this final imperative, in summation, caps that necessary to enjoy a successful phase two. To have a successful phase two and truly be a prize contender. I'm not talking about just going out and grabbing an increment of SG3 here and there. But we're talking about the very thing that Peter addressed, and that is the evaluation of our life overall, as God will judge us in regards to this at the Bema Seat. Obviously, He will evaluate our lives. If you want to be a prize contender, then all seven of these imperatives must be in full force and effect in regards to your Christian life. And it must be sustained. And obviously, the sustaining is to the very end of our phase two. So eight, the evidence of one's orientation to their faith and hope being in God with the potential of sharing Christ's glory, which was the final issue of verse 21 before this verse, who through Him are believers in God, who raised Him from the dead and gave Him glory, so that, resulting that, or for purpose, your faith and hope are in God. So the evidence of one's orientation to their faith and hope being in God, with the potential of sharing Christ's glory, further demands proper application towards one another. So nine, staying informed for this particular section, Peter infers another unspoken doctrine as that which underwrites his premise of thought. 10, just as he implied the doctrine and importance of Bible doctrine in verses 10 through 12 as foundational to the imperatives evidencing a just and positive volition, so he again draws upon another silent theme as a foundation for verse 22. The overall impact of his deferring to the positive volition of Old Testament saints and the very desire and will of elect angels with respect to Bible doctrine in a silent way brings out the doctrine and importance of Bible doctrine, which we picked up on going through those verses. And it underwrites, if you will, that doctrine underwrites what Peter now has come in with the royal imperatives to ascertain or discern whether or not one really regards Bible doctrine that importantly. And our thoughts on that matter will be vindicated as he will then, following this verse, explicitly bring in the doctrines of Porter's Bible doctrine to wind up this section. And as he did so, in other words, Peter's dealing with believers that have been taught sound doctrine. And these believers, for all intents and purposes in Asia Minor, overall, corporately, the church at this point in time in its history in this particular geographical region, were adjusted. And they knew the doctrine. And he takes that, and he has very strong theological implications in regards to all that he brings forward here in this first chapter. I was thinking the other day, if there is as much theology in the rest of this book as there is chapter 1, we'll be at it for a while. All right? I mean, if nothing else, all the doctrines we've done off this one chapter. And I obviously didn't do every one that we could in that regard. It speaks for itself. I do those doctrines not only for your edification, but also for my own benefit when I'm going through these books to refresh my own thinking and to reevaluate, and it truly, in a lot of cases, helps me maintain the proper focus and balance regardless of what's going on in the context. And just as he brought in this implicit way, in a silent way, in his own words, the importance of Bible doctrine, he now presents another unspoken doctrine that underwrites his thoughts in regards to these verses that we're dealing with. So 11, that is, all that Christ has done in sacrifice for our redemption in executing the Father's eternal plan, verses 18 through 21 of his redeeming work, is no less than God's expression towards us under the doctrine of love. When you looked at those verses, when we did those verses, obviously the doctrine of love should be part of our thinking. That this is what Christ did for us. And this is what God has provided for us in His plan. He sacrificed His own plus R so that we could be, you know, a part of God's family and to function appropriately before God. So the doctrine of love now becomes the unspoken doctrine from which He draws upon in His addressing the believers with His final imperative. So 12, it is now obvious that Peter has in mind this notion as it now becomes the issue of application in a handful of believers. Brotherly love and to love one another. So obviously love's on his mind, is it not? Where did that stem from? From his reflection in regards to the person and work of Jesus Christ and truly what that means. So 13, by recognizing that, it adds another layer of intent behind our verse, an extension of the previous six commands. It adds another aspect of pearl of appreciation and intent behind the previous six commands. So 14, that is, as God has so loved us, John 3:16, which I assume everyone in here knows, for God so loved the world, He gave His uniquely begotten Son so that we can have eternal life. Paraphrasing. So that as God has so loved the world, so we should emulate Him in application to one another. The whole premise of loving one another is parallel to being holy. God in His holiness, as part of His attributes, expresses that holiness to men under the attribute of love, which is His motivating attribute in regards to expression of His person to others. So it parallels all that really He has brought forward, culminating it in regards to our purpose and goal of being holy in life. So 15 verse 22 completes the very purpose of our method of operation and all that determines our holy conduct and likeness to Him. In other words, you know, being in fellowship and being in Bible class and maintaining divine viewpoint in our Christian lives, being holy, living in righteous fear. Is that all there is to the Christian life? No. There's a reason why we're supposed to be that way. And that's because of the importance of God expressing His plan to others around us. See, as a witness of a life, if you will. So 16, so recognizing these two things, employing these two silent themes, in essence, fulfills the two greatest commandments of the law as taught by Christ. Matthew 22:36-40, Jesus Christ, the incarnate Christ, the first advent, was asked, what's the two greatest commandments of the law? And he responds. And it's recorded for us, Matthew 22:36-40. And he's asked, teacher, which is the greatest, which is the great commandment in the law? The greatest. It doesn't mean that this is the only commandment. But his response provides, in a succinct way, the very intent of all of Bible doctrine. In a very short, concise way. And so he answers, and he said to him, verse 37, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. That's the greatest commandment. If a person is fulfilling this obligation, they're fulfilling the rest of the law. Essentially is what he's saying. Obviously, if you're not adhering to the rest of the law, you're not fulfilling this commandment either. And then he goes on to provide even another commandment, which falls right in place and is parallel, obviously, to the great commandment. And that's verse 39. The second is like it. It says, like it. This is God. He expects service to Him. But in service to Him, He expects service to others. The second is like it. You will love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. So those two commandments provides the intent of Bible doctrine in and of itself as its effects or effects each and every one of us in what we do. And there's two primary reasons for application. So employing these two silent things in essence fulfills the two greatest commandments of the law as taught by Christ. 17, by adhering to the doctrine and importance to Bible doctrine, we fulfill the first. We're loving God with all our hearts, souls, and minds by adhering to the importance of Bible doctrine. So, by adhering to the doctrine and importance of Bible doctrine, we fulfill the first. And by applying divine love, we fulfill the second. The neighbor next to you, in regards to your own fellowship in the Christian life, is loving one another. Love doesn't end there, but the principle starts there. So 18 is Matthew 22:39-40 make clear. Both commandments are the very foundation of maintaining the integrity of God's plan and application by believers. So 19, Peter has taken the thoughts of these two commandments and cohesively employed them, providing the particulars necessary in execution, now is applied to the church. There's the two greatest commandments. Now he's telling these believers the imperatives of adjustments that they need to maintain in their own Christian lives to fulfill these two commandments as they apply in regards to being a believer living in the church age dispensation. And we're given the particulars. This is cool beans. That's why I said that. It's cool beans. You don't like it, then take the beans and go out and pass it somewhere. But this is good stuff. When you look at Bible doctrine and you see the depth of doctrine in regards to God's expression and communication to us, and what all that means and realization and appreciation of it. Bible doctrine is a very beautiful thing. The harmony of it. The consistency of it. And we're seeing a really good example of that at this point in time in Peter's opening statements. So Peter has taken the thoughts of these two commandments and cohesively employed them, providing the particulars necessary in execution as applied to the church. So 20, that's continuity of subject of thought by Peter as the author. Prevail, dismissing any notion of an abrupt change in the thinking of Peter as this verse may appear on the surface. Fact is, most commentaries that I've run across, they come to verse 22 and, wow, it seems like there's just an abrupt change. He's dealing with, you know, the individual's life. Now, all of a sudden, love becomes the subject. But when you see it within this context and understanding where Peter's coming from, it makes perfect sense. And obviously, the fact that it is necessary to completely fulfill the law, then it makes even more sense. The final love commandment. So 21, now getting into it here, the text itself. Peter again acknowledges the positive volition of these saints, beginning the paragraph. Since purifying your souls in obedience to the truth for a genuine love of the brothers. So 22, the perfect participle of purifying, agnizo, indicates something already having occurred. The perfect tense looks at action in the past with existing results. So he's saying, you've already done this. You're doing this, the participle part of it. They've done this and they're keeping on doing this. See, participle denotes continuous action. And therefore, it's a direct acknowledgement that they're doing it right. So 23, now James uses similar language with respect to believers' hearts. Here, Peter says, purifying your souls. James uses similar language in James 4:8, but the heart is the object of purifying. James 4:8, we saw there. Draw near to God, and He will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. And it gives you a sense of, James gives you a sense of what it really means to purify something. And that is, you're not double-minded. And what we have here is Peter using his own language. And he's going to have his own object discussion for purification. Is that whatever it is, it's not hypocritical. So 24, as with James, it indicates a moral cleansing conducive to a non-hypocritical standard for application. 25, Peter explicitly states the sphere of that standard as, quote, obedience to the truth, end quote. Cleansing the hands in James passage pictured rebound. And what he was talking about, purifying one's heart, was to jettison the human viewpoint, sacred cows, sponsored by the SCA in their lives, and make doctrine their standard. And we brought that out in regards to that verse. And now Peter explicitly states how this purification process is able to be fulfilled in one's life. And that's obedience to the truth. So 26, this is the third time Peter has referenced these believers' obedience. Verse 2, where he looked at their initial obedience of obeying Jesus Christ in regards to the gospel message. And then verse 14, where he likens them as obedient children. So this is the third time Peter has referenced these believers' obedience. 27, that their obedience is stated as a given fact, indicates their willingness to be both hearers and doers of Bible doctrine. And obeying the gospel message, that is an act of faith apart from any works. You do that, you believe in Jesus Christ, nothing else you can do to make that any better. See, and it's all that's required. Faith in the object of the person, Jesus Christ. But phase two faith demands not only that you believe Bible doctrine in regards to your Christian life, but you apply it in your Christian life. If you lack the application, then you're not truly expressing phase two positive volition. And the fact that their obedience is stated here as a given fact indicates that they have taken the doctrine and they're running with it. They're applying it in their Christian lives. They are oriented to their own spiritual well-being and applying it appropriately, sufficient that they have purification of soul, as Peter so states it. So 28, Peter's object of purification is directed towards their souls, that's psuche in the Greek. 29, the soul is the real you, wherein volition resides and affects mankind's decisions in life. God created us as free moral agents, and our ability to choose freely is what's called our volition or will, and our will is a free will. And we refer to it as the real you because it reflects truly what you want and what you embrace in life. For all the information that we assimilate otherwise through the brain, computer, etc., our volition is back there constantly in the picture, choosing, all right, I'm going to accept this, I'm going to reject that, blah, blah, blah. And it reflects really where we're coming from in regards to what we believe and what we don't believe. So the soul is the real you, wherein volition resides and affects mankind's decisions in life. 30, these believers came to the ultimate conclusion to choose the truth of Bible doctrine as their standard for life. They made this choice on their own free will. And Peter is once again, in his own way, saying kudos to you. That's a good thing. But it's not to stop there in regards to their own personal lives. So 31, in so doing, these believers have maintained a soul rendered pure. That's the continuous effect of the participle. 32, this is evidenced in their orientation to the first six imperatives, which they're in line with, and it's all a reminder and expression in regards to the doctrine at hand is applicable to them. And they maintain that pure soul because they are oriented, first and foremost, to the first six imperatives. So a pure soul, if you will, is equivalent to expression of positive volition. Positive volition, phase two. So 33, through orientation or submission to the truth, they have sustained positive volition of the soul, realizing the very purpose behind their redemption. The very purpose behind their redemption. You become a child of God. Now what's the purpose? To be obedient children. And unfortunately, 99.9% of believers today are not obedient. Because why? They don't have a pure soul. They are making choices in their life that disregards the imperatives given to us in the first six of that we have seen with Peter, providing the capability, ability, and means to express positive volition. This is probably about as clear as I have seen explicitly declaring what phase two positive volition is all about in such a concise outline manner. So through orientation to the truth, they have sustained positive volition of the soul, realizing the very purpose behind their redemption. That's to be obedient children. 34, it is fitting that Peter specifies their souls, as that is what is redeemed as salvation. What's redeemed are souls. Your soul is destined, apart from faith in Jesus Christ, for eternal condemnation. So our soul, which is the eternal outfitting of our body, in an internal way, that is eternal and will continue on once this physical body deteriorates and is gone. And it is the soul that is redeemed, Psalm 34:22. Obviously, it has further impact because it's going to provide for us the redemption of our bodies in resurrection form. But it is the soul that is the initial and primary focus of redemption. And Psalm, again, Psalm 34:22, as we saw it in the doctrine of redemption. The Lord redeems the soul of His servants, and none of those who take refuge in Him will be condemned. Our choices in life, and that's what Peter is emphasizing, they have made that life choice. They have committed themselves to the standard of Bible doctrine to govern and influence all of their decisions in life. And it's evidence in regards to their priorities of application that we have forthwith seen. So it is fitting that Peter specifies their souls as that which is redeemed at salvation. 35, it highlights the volition of the believer now pertaining to their phase 2. So 36, in conjunction with deliverance from spiritual death, phase 1, the soul is further delivered from absolute rulership of the STA. 37, rather than allow the STA to conform their lives as, quote, obedient children, end quote, verse 14, they have allowed Bible doctrine under the filling of the Holy Spirit to rule over their souls. So how do you have a pure soul? Let Bible doctrine rule under God the Holy Spirit. You are making the proper moral decisions according to God's divine design in your life. So rather than allow the SCA to conform their lives as obedient children, they have allowed Bible doctrine and the filling of the Holy Spirit to rule over their souls. 38, as new converts, these believers have been taught the things necessary to live righteously in the world and before one another. They've been taught that doctrine, just like that doctrine has been taught right here for the last 12 years at least. So it all comes down, if you will, to the soul. Once again, it's your choice. You know? And if you want to do it the right way, well, here's the doctrine. These believers early on have been taught the doctrine. And this doctrine is continued being handed down by other just communicators in time to others. The principle of rebound, the principle of the importance of being in part of the local church and assimilating the information. All these things these believers have been taught to live righteously in the world and obviously as it would impact before one another. So 39, it was their orientation to the truth that gave these believers a real sense of purpose for being a part of Christianity, that is, God's family. People have their reasons for going to church. If you want a real sense of purpose, look at these believers as your example. He gave them a real sense. Doctrine is what gives you your sense of purpose in life. And it gives you a sense of purpose for, well, I'm a Christian, now what? I'm one of God's children, now what? Well, if you don't adhere to the standards of Bible doctrine, you'll never realize and recognize the true sense of purpose of why we were saved. See? In this respect. And because of their orientation, they had genuine brotherly love in regards to one another. If your sense of purpose in life is in disregard in regards to the imperatives at hand, then to that degree, your sense of purpose is diminished with respect to really being in God's family, being one of His children. So it was their orientation to the truth that gave these believers a real sense of purpose for being a part of Christianity, God's family. 40, this is the sense, this is the sense of the next phrase, for a genuine love of the brothers. 41, the preposition for, ice, here emphasizes purpose to indicate the continued manifestation or evidence of their phase 2 positive volition. In addition to the first 6 imperatives, this is the final one given that provides the cap, a summation, if you will, of the evidence of these believers' positive volition. And that is, they recognize their sense of purpose of being a Christian. The term love of the brothers, Philadelphia, means brotherly love. 43, it is terminology used to indicate the circle of Christian fellowship within the church. More specifically, if you will, the local church. See, there's a church universal. What's a church universal? That's every person that's ever believed living in the church age dispensation from the day of Pentecost to the end of this dispensation. But the way the church universal functions, since we're spread out throughout the world, is through the microcosm of the local churches. That believers who live in geographical regions, like-minded positive volition, gather together to function in a microcosmic way. And this particular terminology emphasizes that circle of Christian fellowship. Romans 12:10. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. That's our term. Give preference to one another in honor. Paul tells you where your true devotion should lay in regards to your Christian life. Who should take preference with respect to your Christian life? Also 1 Thessalonians 4:9. As to the love of the brothers, you have no need for anyone to write to you, for you yourselves are taught by God to love one another. Thessalonian churches, the epistles to the Thessalonian churches, often referred to as a model church, and they had their spiritual act together. And Paul acknowledges their orientation in this respect. And that looks at their inner fellowship of assembly as microcosm portions of the church in Thessalonica. So there's a terminology used to indicate the circle of Christian fellowship within the church. 44, it is a product of godliness and itself a platform to express love. Brotherly love is a product of godliness and itself a platform to express love. 2 Peter 1:7. And in your godliness, the sphere of godliness, what does it produce? Brotherly kindness or brotherly love. That's our term. And in your brotherly love or kindness, agapao. Love, divine love. And see, that's what we're after here. Or that's what's being presented. Excuse me. So, true brotherly love is a product of godliness, which they have obviously already evidenced that they have that through the first 6 imperatives, in itself a platform to express love. It is the natural result. So 45, this term epitomizes what true Christian fellowship is supposed to be. Everybody has their ideas, and you go out in the church and you see a plethora of ideas of what it means to fellowship. See, if you want to know true Christian fellowship, here's your instruction. Here's qualifications for it. So 46, all believers become a part of the church universal as saving faith for the purpose of true fellowship with like-minded souls in obedience to the truth. How do you become a part of the church universal? You believe in Jesus Christ. That's what everybody does to become a part of the church universal. Are we not like-minded at that point in time in our lives? Yes, we are. So how does Operation Local Church, how is it designed to function? In a like-minded way in regards to Bible doctrine. See? That's the point. That's the point that's being made by this term. And the purpose why we become Christians, apart from, obviously, to escape eternal condemnation, but experientially, is to then serve God according to His directive wills in regards to being believers living in the church age. And that is to engage in fellowship with like-minded souls in obedience to the truth. Not with souls that are choosing to disobey the truth. That's not the purpose, the divine purpose of being a regenerated believer with a human spirit that is created in righteousness and set apart for the truth. Come on, stay with me. All this doctrine, it's just glued together. Can't get it off. It's like a bad booger on your finger, man, I'm telling you. If you're hooked in, you'll never get it off. If you're not, hey. So all believers come a part of the Church Universal. Yeah, my sense of humor. I'm from the farm. All right, give me a break. As saving faith for the purpose of true fellowship with like-minded souls in obedience to the truth. So 37, that fellowship is experientially realized through the microcosms of local churches. Peter leaves no doubt that there is a wrong way and right way to interact with fellow believers, employing the term genuine. Anupokritos. That characterizes brotherly love. They have a genuine brotherly love. See? 49, this adjective occurs 6 times in the New Testament and means without hypocrisy or, if you will, sincere. First and foremost, it is to characterize our love. Romans 12:9. Let love be without hypocrisy. So as to characterize the love that we express. Before what is evil, cling to what is good. 2 Corinthians 6:6. That's the same adverb. 2 Corinthians 6:6. Impurity. That's our motives and knowledge and patience and kindness. And the Holy Spirit in genuine love. Love without hypocrisy. The term is also used to characterize our faith. 1 Timothy 1:5. Our belief, what we embrace. Charge or instruction is love from a pure heart and a good conscience and sincere faith, as they translate it. Faith without hypocrisy. Also, 2 Timothy 1:5. And also, if anyone competes as an athlete, 2 Timothy 1:5. I am mindful, Timothy, of the genuine or sincere faith within you, which first dwelt in your grandmother Lois, she was positive too. And your mother Eunice, she was positive too. Now, sure that it dwells in you as well. A genuine faith. Approaching Bible doctrine without hypocrisy. That's intellectual honesty. See? And then C, finally, genuine is indicative of Bible doctrine. Bible doctrine is without hypocrisy. James 3:17. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. Our term. Alright, so 50, Peter's emphasis is that true phase 2 fellowship stems from orientation to the truth as the catalyst for spiritual kinship with each other. 51, this begins at salvation when we obey the gospel phase 1, as we noted verse 2, and experientially is realized phase 2 by adhering to the local church under NPR as obedient children to the truth, verse 14, tying it in together with Peter's epistle. 52, apart from the truth, our participation towards the embodiment of believers is hypocritical and obviously less than holy or righteous. 54, the truth encompasses all the pertinent doctrine necessary to ensure a, quote, pure soul. 55, the doctrine has been summarized by the previous six commandments in verses 13 through 17. So 56, only with positive relation to Bible doctrine can the believer enjoin fellowship as a real deal, free from pretense, that which is not phony or fake. And you hear that a lot, you know, people going to fundamentalist churches, and you know, it's just an air of phoniness, fakeness about them, you know, emotionalism. If you walk in an adjusted assembly, you won't find that. There will be no pretense. We're all here for one reason, Bible doctrine. See, that's our number one love and life, as we would proclaim. And the only way that you can truly have that kind of fellowship, have the real deal of fellowship, as God has so designed for it to occur, is by adhering to Bible doctrine. So 57, these believers, like the Thessalonians, knew the importance of Bible doctrine in their own Christian lives. And time's up, so we'll pick that up Tuesday. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God the Holy Spirit continue to